So if it's a little small for you, I'll read it for you. I'll read it from verses 16 to 57. He has made my teeth grind on gravel and made me cower in ashes. My soul is bereft of peace. I have forgotten what happiness is. So I say, my endurance has perished. So has my hope from the Lord. Remember my affliction and my wanderings, the wormwood and the gall. My soul continually remembers it and is bowed down within me. But this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore I will hope in him. The Lord is good to those who wait for him, to the soul who seeks him. It is good that one should wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. It is good for a man that he bear the yoke of his youth. Let him sit alone in silence when it is laid on him. Let him put his mouth in the dust. There may yet be hope. Let him give his cheek to the one who strikes, and let him be filled with insults. For the Lord will not cast off forever, but though he cause grief, he will have compassion according to the abundance of his steadfast love. For he does not afflict from his heart or grieve the children of men. To crush underfoot all the prisons of the earth, to deny a man justice in the presence of the Most High, to subvert a man in his lawsuit, the Lord does not approve. Who has spoken and it came to pass, unless the Lord has commanded it? Is it not from the mouth of the Most High that good and bad come? Why should a living man complain, a man, about the punishment of his sins? Let us test and examine our ways and return to the Lord. Let us lift up our hearts and hands to God in heaven. We have transgressed and rebelled, and you have not forgiven. You have wrapped yourself with anger and pursued us, killing without pity. You have wrapped yourself with a cloud, so that no prayer can pass through. You have made us scum and garbage among the peoples. All our enemies open their mouths against us. Panic and pitfall have come upon us, devastation and destruction. My eyes flow with rivers of tears because of the destruction of the daughter of my people. My eyes will flow without ceasing, without respite, until the Lord from heaven looks down and sees. My eyes cause me grief at the fate of the daughters of my city. I have been hunted like a bird by those who were my enemies without cause. They flung me alive into the pit and cast stones on me. Water closed over my head. I said, I am lost. I called on your name, O Lord, from the depths of the pit. You heard my plea. Do not close your ear to my cry for help. You came near when I called on you. You said, do not fear.
Thanks, Andrew. With lots of people, you can learn about them as soon as you come to their house. If I come to the front door and I see this chap, he tells me about the people who put him there and about how they see the universe and about how they approach the big hurdles of life. Or if I go into a family's house and there's a picture on the wall like this, it helps me to understand a lot about them and what's important to them and how they think about the universe. Or inside the hallway or in the living room, posters or wall hangings with magnificent calligraphy that I can't read, but telling me lots about what is important to these people. And that's the way it is for lots of the world. Reminders and pictures all around our homes. Christian believers often do the same kind of things. Back in the days before glossy coloured posters, our Victorian ancestors made all of those needlework Bible verses to hang up in their homes. Nowadays, we might plonk a bit of the Psalms on Facebook to make a kind of statement for everyone else to see. I've got these words up above the monitor of my computer. Best way that I know of keeping clear of bad things online. Everyone's got different taste and everyone likes to do their rooms in different ways, and no one is obliged to put money in the hands of people who make glossy colour posters, but if it helps to remind you of who you are and who God is, and if it works as a talking point for people who come to your house, go for it. And in all the posters and all the pictures and all the embroideries that we might put around our rooms or memes that we might post, verses 22 and 23 here are hot on the list. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. It is a fantastic thing to say about God, and one that we probably need reminding of over and over and over. So if posters and embroideries help to remind us of that, then go for it. But the bit that I have never seen up on anyone's wall is verse 16. He has made my teeth grind on gravel and made me cower in ashes. My soul is bereft of peace. I have forgotten what happiness is. Put it in the dining room, maybe, with the teeth reference. Or up in the bedroom where it's the first thing I see when I get up in the morning. No one is ever going to sell this as a poster, are they? But this bit, verse 16, gives verse 22 its power. Verse 16 makes verse 22 and 23 stronger statements than anything that Ganesh or the Quran or anyone else ever offered us. And forget about the sunrises and the lakes and the fields of daisies. Verse 16 makes 22 and 23 something that can help us in the very darkest places. See how this works. We're in Lamentations in the Old Testament, and we are in the very middle of the book. So we know exactly where we are. It's 586 BC. The city of Jerusalem has just fallen. Three rounds of invasions over 20 years, ending with the big one. Armies round the city, famine inside, 18 months of siege, and then finally destruction, complete destruction, and the survivors carted off to Babylon. And our lamenter gives us the cry of pain from inside all of that. And even worse than the war and the destruction, even worse than that, the understanding. The unambiguous understanding, so clear that there can be no doubt, this is God's judgment on the people. Back in chapter 1, Lamentations 1:14, my transgressions were bound into a yoke. By his hand they were fastened together. They were set upon my neck. This pain, this destruction is God's judgment. 600 years of unfaithfulness and wandering off into strange things since Moses. And now the unfaithfulness of these people in 586 BC, at the end of it all. This time, this is judgment. And that ought to alert us when we read it. That ought to alert us that however much some of this feels like us, it is not us. This is not our experience. However bad it gets for us, however hopeless, however deep the pain, the lamenter is in deeper than us. You know, we might be in the oncology ward, too doped up to even think straight. We might be running for our lives to get away from rebel soldiers. We might be betrayed and thrown out without food or sleep or able to see any way ahead, but the lamenter is in deeper than that. I mean, I've had them, you've probably had them, those endless long minutes of waiting to hear some news from the hospital, but when you phone them, they say, still in theatre. Still going. Or those frozen, bloodless moments when you're sitting in front of the boss and the boss explains patiently that you can't work here anymore. And his voice turns into a buzz in your ears and everything recedes into infinite distance while you grapple with, how am I going to put bread on the table? Or that dreadful phone call that begins, I'm sorry to tell you, Mr. Wood, that there's been an accident. Right. I've had those, all those things. You've probably had those versions of them. But the lamenter is in deeper than that. And that means that the lamenter can help us with all of them. The lamenter is experiencing the judgment of God himself. Like we saw last week, he is in the nearest thing in this world to the pit of hell. And see how that works so dreadfully in these verses. In the verses just before this bit, we get verse 4. He has made my flesh and my skin waste away. He has broken my bones. He has besieged and enveloped me with bitterness and tribulation. He has made me dwell in darkness like the dead of long ago. Relentlessly, verse after verse, God has done this. Verse 10. He is a bear lying in wait for me, a lion in hiding. He has turned aside my steps and torn me to pieces. He has made me desolate. He has all the terrible things. This is from God. This is judgment. And for the lamenter, like in chapter 1, the truly terrible knowledge that they've earned this. It's especially painful in this chapter. Back in chapter 1, we had Jerusalem presented to us like a person speaking about what had happened. And then in chapter 4, last week, we had words from inside the siege telling us what it was like in there. But here we have an individual. The lamenter is being an ordinary Jerusalem person and telling us, verse 1, I am the man who has seen affliction under the rod of his wrath. It's still an alphabet poem like the other chapters, but this time the lamenter is writing to us as an individual with his own voice, telling us how it is for him. And as well as the pain in the first 16 verses, there's the note of verse 8. Though I call and cry for help, he shuts out my prayer. This is a world of saying no to God and to his goodness and saying no so long and so hard and so many times that now God has said no to him. the lamenter is in a place that none of us have ever visited. And part of setting it out for us here in Lamentations is to warn us off. Do not go there. This is God's judgment. It is bad. While you still have any choice, do not go there. So we get the darkness of verse 16. He has made my teeth grind on gravel, and he has made me cower in ashes. My soul is bereft of peace. I have forgotten what happiness is. Verse 16 is a dentist's drill of a verse with no anaesthetic. You know, it is just painful to read. And verse 17 climaxes the long list of darkness. My soul is bereft of peace. I have forgotten what happiness is. And that's it. It's all over. Then comes the change. And watch this carefully. Because anything that could change things this much for the lamenter in his dark place, anything that could change things this much has got to be useful for us. Look at verse 19. Remember my affliction and my wanderings, the wormwood and the gall. My soul continually remembers it and is bowed down within me. So his head is full of where he is at the moment, and that gives him that really easy to understand piece of picture language. My soul is bowed down within me. But then verse 21, but this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. And we want to know what this is. With his teeth grinding on the gravel, and after he's turned God into his enemy, what can he possibly call to mind that gives him any hope? What can possibly give him hope in the mess that he's in? And if we understand it, can it give us hope? The thing he calls to mind has nothing to do with his circumstances. Nothing to do with what's happening for him. The ruins of Jerusalem are going to stay ruins. And the exiled people are going to stay exiled. But he remembers the most important thing that he can think about. Verse 22. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. Be careful with this, because there is a big, strong, certain thing here, and there is a small uncertainty. The big, strong, certain thing is easy to spot. The steadfast love of the Lord. My goodness, that's a big idea. There is a word in the Old Testament, an old Hebrew word that gets translated as steadfast love, or kindness, or the Lord's great love, or faithful love in all the different English versions. But steadfast love is a good way to translate it. It's the love of the covenant. The love where God commits himself and he sticks with it. The love where God gives himself to do good to the people he loves and he sticks with that. It's the love where he loves people who are grossly unlovable and he sticks with it and he does them good. So, in Genesis, it's the love that God showed Abraham and the others when he made promises and stuck with them. In Exodus 15, it's what the people celebrate about God when he brings them through the Red Sea and out of slavery. And then after the business with the golden calf at Mount Sinai, this is the way that God speaks about himself. Exodus 34. The Lord, a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love. Can we go back, please, Trevor? You've jumped ahead. And further back? Further back, further back, further back. There we are. Thank you. The Lord, a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness, keeping steadfast love for thousands, forgiving iniquity and transgression and sin, but who will by no means clear the guilty. That is as close as the Old Testament gets to having a creed, abounding in steadfast love. And God doesn't just say it, he shows it. Right there in Exodus 34, he shows it, taking the people onto the promised land after the golden calf business. In Numbers, he shows it by keeping going with the people when they rebel and want to go back to Egypt. Sticking with his people all the time through the judges and in the time of David. The prophets really get hold of this. So we get Hosea the prophet. In spite of everything that has happened, God speaking through Hosea to the prophet, to the people like a bride. I will betroth you to me in righteousness and justice, in steadfast love and in mercy. Or Joel the prophet, return to the Lord your God, for he is gracious and merciful, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love. And even Jonah's magnificent grumble when God saves the worst people in the world. Oh, that's why I made haste to flee to Tarshish, for I knew that you're a gracious God and merciful, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love. Oh, what'd you go and have to save them for? You know, you want to know something about God? In the Old Testament, this is the thing that God wants you to know about himself. Who is God? A God merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness. And he's not a kind of theory about God put together by a bunch of priests sitting in the temple in front of a candle and thinking, oh, if there is a God, what might he be like? No, this is their experience of God among their people and among their families, over and over and over again through centuries of their history. And it's the words of prophet after prophet after prophet, abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness. And for us as New Testament people, the New Testament takes this idea and shows us even more of it. What do we know about God's gracious, committed love? John 15, Jesus says, greater love has no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Paul writes in Ephesians, God, who is rich in mercy, out of the great love with which he loved us, even when we were dead through trespasses, made us alive together with Christ. And then, of course, Paul in Romans chapter 5, one will hardly die for a righteous man, though perhaps for a good man one will dare even to die. But God shows his love for us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. And if we want to think about that Christ died bit a little harder, all those things in this chapter, all those experiences that lead up to verse 16, the pain and the alienation and being judged by God, having every good thing ripped away, that is the experience of the cross. That is what Jesus endured out of his love, so that we don't have to endure it. That's what Jesus endured in love for unlovely people, so that we will not have to. That's taking the steadfast love of the Old Testament and pushing it further in every direction, isn't it? If we want to know what steadfast love looks like for us, we see it big and bold in the cross. And just like in the Old Testament, where steadfast love is the way that God makes himself known, for us, God's love given to us through what Jesus does on the cross, that is how God makes himself known. And that shapes how we think about him, and how we think about life, and how we think about each other. And here, in verse 22, it's the Old Testament version of that. The steadfast love of God. That changes everything for our lamenter. And the lamenter's greatest insight, that steadfast love of God, that committed love for the unlovable, the lamenter's insight is, it's even worth appealing to that here, under God's judgment. It's even worth appealing to that in the smoking ruins of the city. And this is a turning point. This is the big, strong, certain thing. Now, I mentioned that there's a small uncertainty as well, but that is not about the steadfast love. It's about what never ceases. It's something that we notice if we've got a couple of different Bibles. You know, you read this in your Bible fellowship group and say, well, how come your Bible says something different from mine? So our ESV here says, the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. But the old red NIV Bibles on our seats say, because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail, they are new every morning. So in our ESV, it's the steadfast love of the Lord that doesn't cease. And in the NIV, it's the people who do not cease. They are not consumed. Because of the steadfast love of the Lord, they don't get consumed. So, which doesn't cease? The steadfast love or the people? Oh, but it gets worse, because if we've been knocking around for a bit, both versions, both ways of thinking about the verse, are well drilled into our heads by music. So way back in the 1970s, in fossil times, Edith McNeil did a folk song version of this one that I won't try to sing. It didn't include the bit about the teeth and the gravel, but it went, the steadfast, since the 70s, the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning, new every morning. Great is your faithfulness, O Lord. Yes, sing along. But on the other hand, in 2010, Colin Buchanan did a country version of the NIV one. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail. His love is new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. Now, I want to keep both songs, so I want both versions to be right. The Holman Bible and the old King James Authorized Version go with the NIV. But The CEV that we use in kids' church and the old RSV, go with this, ESV. And there is a completely unimportant story behind the difference. Completely unimportant. It turns out that the NIV's one, because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed. That's what it says in the good old Hebrew copies of the Old Testament that we usually use from the 900s AD. So King James's people used it and everything's fine. But there's evidence in some old manuscripts, like that one, that back before the first century, there was another version of the Hebrew Old Testament, and one that goes way back, and a very small spelling mistake happened to give us what we have from the 900s and in the NIV. Writing a Hebrew letter N instead of a Hebrew letter M. That kind of small spelling mistake. And going back in the history of manuscripts from before the spelling mistake, we get this ESV one. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. And this ESV is probably closer to the lament, to what the lamenter said. There we go. I said it was completely unimportant. But we do wonder, don't we? You know, how come your Bible is a little bit different from my Bible? But go back to the strong, certain thing. The steadfast love of the Lord. And see the strength of it here, because for our lamenter, it changes the landscape. He is still not somewhere that you'd put on a wall poster. He is still living with the wreck of Jerusalem and the judgment of his people. But remembering this about God, he goes to verse 24. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore I will hope in him. And the astonishing verse 25. The Lord is good to those who wait for him, to the soul that seeks him. And because of the steadfast love of the Lord, the lamenter tells us with absolute conviction in verse 31, for the Lord will not cast off forever, but though he cause grief, he will have compassion, according to the abundance of his steadfast love. And where does that take him? That idea, where does it lead? Verse 40. Let us test and examine our ways and return to the Lord. Let us lift our hearts and hands to God in heaven. We have transgressed and rebelled and you have not forgiven. He will have compassion. In verse 32, he will have compassion leads to return to the Lord. In verse 40, and here's the steadfast love of the Lord. Here's the love of God that speaks to the people after the golden calf. Here's the love that loves people like David and Abraham. Here's the steadfast love that New Testament comes through Jesus. Even in the world of verse 16, there can still be verse 32. He will have compassion. This is not automatic. This is not obvious. This is not simple. And for our lamenter, it is deeply, deeply humiliating. But it's return to the Lord. With nothing to offer, nothing in the hand, nothing to put on the table, but only the steadfast love of the Lord to cling to. And what do we get? What does the lamenter find? Does the Lord have compassion? Verse 55. I called on your name, O Lord, from the depths of the pit. You heard my plea. Do not close your ear to my cry for help. You came near me when I called on you. You said, do not fear. You have taken up my cause, O Lord. You have redeemed my life. And there we see exactly what the lamenter needs and what we need. This is the darkest place in the Old Testament. It's not just siege and famine and war and destruction. This is unfaithfulness and betrayal. This is deep inside God's judgment and the end of old Israel's story. This is God himself as the enemy. He has made my teeth grind on gravel. And what is the steadfast love of the Lord like? Into this darkness, God reaches and takes hold of the lamenter. And we get, you came near me when I called on you. You said, do not fear. You have taken up my cause, O Lord. You have redeemed my life. This is what we really need from God, isn't it? And this is the lamenter's great shining light in the darkness. This is a light that's even brighter for us, New Testament, with the cross behind us. In the worst of places, the thing we really need in any place, not just on a poster, but written deep into our being, the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says your soul, says my soul. Therefore, I will hope in him.